Hadassah, and I'm so excited to welcome you to Real Woman, Real Torah, a project of Bacheva Learning Center. We're here to offer you an authentic Torah learning experience, produced for woman, by woman. I hope you enjoy. I'm so excited to welcome Shoshana Wolf for this episode, our Rosh Chodesh Sivan Mimer episode. Shoshana is an old friend of mine and now my next door neighbor. So we got to actually get together in person and like review this together, which was really fun. Shoshana, I'm going to let you introduce yourself first and then maybe tell us a little bit about the mimer that we're going to be learning today.
Okay, so hi everyone. I'm Shoshana Wolf. I'm really excited to be doing this. I've been taking Hadassah's courses, well, Bacheva Learning Institute courses, for quite some time now. As soon as I found out about Bacheva Learning Institute, I was all in and doing as many courses as I could. So I actually did this, I learned this mimer a few years back in one of the courses that we did. And I remember being so incredibly inspired by it. And the chavrustas that I was learning it with, I remember just bringing out different points that really resonated with me and really had an impact. So should I talk about that?
Sure.
Okay, so one of the things that I remembered from this mimer was a really awesome point that, well, the pasuk that we're going to be going through is, and learning the deeper side of it, is Ve'yasfu anavim b'havaya simcha. And what it means is, and those who are humble will increase their joy in God. And I remember being really incredibly inspired by the fact that we learned that in order to elicit this Gilui Rav that it talks about in the mimer, the only way to elicit that is by serving Hashem with simcha. And the way that we are able to make ourselves a keli for that simcha that elicits this Gilui Rav is through having humility. So in order to make ourselves a keli to elicit the most powerful revelation of godliness is through serving Hashem with joy, and we can serve Hashem with any type of emotion, but the only way to access the deepest, most powerful place and revelation is through serving Hashem with joy. So that really stuck with me, and who doesn't want to elicit the most powerful place that we can in God?
Yeah, so this mimer is definitely a major theme is about joy. And I think there's so many like really powerful, relevant ideas that are explored here, you know, like what real joy is, what real happiness is, and also like how that, you know, comes along with our own experience of ourselves, right? Like what is real self-esteem? You know, what is self-consciousness? How much self-consciousness or self-awareness is healthy and how much is not? How does that come along with our experience of joy? We also talk a lot about, you know, entitlement, appreciation, like what it means to actually appreciate things in our lives and not live with a sense of entitlement. So there's like so many really powerful ideas that are discussed here. I know actually the first time I looked at this mimer, it was like way, way back. I don't even remember, years ago, maybe 10 years ago even. And I remember I actually have a sefer, it's a mimer of the Friedrich Rebbe, and I have a sefer of like just a collection of mimer of the Friedrich Rebbe. And I was just like flipping through it one time and I came across this mimer that we're going to learn today. And I was just looking at like sort of the summary of it. And it was about, oh, like how it is that despite what, like this being sort of counterintuitive, a sense of humility and a sense of selflessness actually brings to real joy. And like, how do we understand that? And that's really what this mimer goes to in a very like sort of psychological analysis of what a person who lives with a sense of humility, how that actually brings them to real joy. So I'm really excited to explore this mimer. I want to give just like a quick background to what we're going to be learning. So really, the course that Shoshana is talking about, in that course, we actually explore not just one maamar, but a series of three maamarim, a hemshech. It's a short hemshech of the Frida Karaba. And the first two maamarim, which we're not actually going to be learning, we're going to be learning just the third one. The first two are sort of setting the stage for this one, and it's all about Matan Torah, which is why we chose it for this time of year. It's describing what the experience of Matan Torah was like, and one of the sort of two emotions that we see associated with Matan Torah. One emotion is joy. That was a very joyous occasion, right? Like Shoshana was describing, there's like this immense revelation that's happening, and the reaction is this very powerful sense of joy. And at the same time, we also see in the description of the psukim this sense of like fear and awe and like sort of like losing themselves in the experience. So we kind of see these two almost contradictory emotions happening simultaneously. And finally, in this final, the third mimer in the series, it tries to sort of explore like, how do we understand psychologically how those two emotions coincide? Like, how does a person sort of live with this sense of like joy, and joy again comes along with a sense of like expansiveness and confidence and like this ability to really like achieve great things, and at the same time live with this sense of, you know, self-effacement, like not completely beyond your sense of self. So yeah, let's dive right in.
All right, so we had some amazing discussions. So relevant and on such, I feel like, contemporary topics, psychological topics, when we learned it inside. So we'll kind of bring those up as we go through the text a little bit, right?
Yeah, so we're going to skip around a little. We're going to read like pieces of the Maamar together today. But we obviously recommend whoever's listening to go back and learn the whole thing, because it's beautiful.
All right, let's go for it. Okay, so we are starting on ice tests, I think. The Yasfu Anavim Bahavaya Simcha, and those who are humble will increase their joy in God. Upirish Rashi Anavim Savlanim. So Rashi explains the word Anavim to mean Savlanim, those who suffer. Shesavlu Ulo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ugzeirosav, that they suffer or they burden themselves with the yoke of Hashem and His commandments. V'tarech l'havin, halo anava v'simcha hem shnei dvarim rechokim zeh mizeh tivam. So we have to understand, because it seems that humility and joy are two emotions that are really very separate and opposite each other at in their nature. Shehem notim el ha'afchias, that they are leaning towards opposing sides. De'anava tiva shiflos, because humility, the nature of humility is lowliness, the heder chashivos atmo, and a lack of self-importance. Demizehu hasavlanus desova ol ugzera, and from this he is able to suffer the yoke of these of Hashem's decrees. Kitivo shalmishehu batel ba'atem de'inu mischashev im atmo klal, and this is the nature of somebody who really nullifies himself as at his essence, and he doesn't think much of himself. And on the other hand, we have a few lines down. The simcha tiva hagba b'chashivas atmo, demizehu ha'hispashtas v'his rachvas b'yoser. So simcha, a person who is joyful, on the other hand, its nature is one of expansion. And a few lines down, it describes somebody who has this emotion of joy as a river that overflows. And like we know, the Chazal, Simcha Poreitz Geder, that joy breaks boundaries, because joy is really an explosive and outward emotion that is so intense and large and expansive. So these are two seemingly opposing characteristics.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about this description of like Anava. It's almost like, I feel like the way we would think of it is almost like someone who's like a pushover, you know, like, oh, like this person who could just take anything and isn't upset by it. It almost sounds like someone who like doesn't have good self-esteem, right? It's like, oh, it's the kind of person who like doesn't really think they deserve anything. They don't just think they deserve better, so they'll just take it. Which seems like the opposite of the kind of person who's like living with this sense of like confidence and expansion and ability to like you know, this sort of energetic.
Yeah, well, the imagery that I have when I think of in the beginning, right here, the imagery that I have of somebody who maybe has a nevus is maybe a crippled person, not necessarily physically crippled, but just like kind of bent over and has their head down and they're just taking whatever comes to them. And then somebody with joy is somebody who like has their head lifted up and they're more open to the world and more expansive and opened up and exuberant. And that's how I see joy. So it seems, counterintuitive that the way to this, this joy is through humility, which seems the opposite just right. From like the external points.
Okay. So now we've sort of set up the question and then Mimer like elaborates a little bit more on the question of like sort of how opposite these two characteristics seem to be. And now we're going to skip ahead to the end of the ice on the next page. And we're going to talk a little bit about why joy is so necessary in Avodas Hashem. And then we're going to sort of start the beginning this answer of why the anava that we're talking about that could bring to joy is different than the one we've been describing until now.
Okay, so odzos da'al yidei avodosozu ba'ahava b'tanugim hinehu mamshech giloi or rav. So specifically through a man's service with avav tanugim, which is a specific type of love, hinehu mamshech giloi or rav. He is able to elicit this great light and reveal this great light. And that's why a person's service of Hashem has to be specifically with joy. Because this joy reaches the level of Atmos or Ein Sof. The Nimshach Gilei Rav and draws down this great revelation. And what is the keli? What is the vessel to have to be able to serve Hashem with this joy? Oh no, sorry. To receive this Simcha Aliona hu bitul dafka. It is specifically through being mevatel, nullifying yourself. So this humility that we're referring to here, that becomes a vessel for joy, it even though it is shiflos, it is this lowliness, it's coming from a recognition of truth, of the emes. Because somebody who is humble, he is totally nullified himself at the core in order to recognize what the truth is. The kol inyan hato sheishlo enu mitzad atmo ki mashabah b'yerusha mavotinu. And he recognizes that all the good that he has about himself, all the good that he has in his life, or the good that he has his good characteristics, he has gotten as an inheritance from his forefathers. Umishum zehu huabitul, and because of this, he sees himself as nullified. About bitul ze eno inyan hashiflus ki im hanachas atmusum akaras haemes. So this type of bitul, this type of self nullification, is not in a manner of putting himself aside, but rather recognizing what the truth of who he is and what he has is from. And through this specific anava, this specific hakarasa emes, he is able to be a vessel for simcha aliona.
Okay, let's unpack this a little bit. I feel like there's a lot in those few lines. So look, let's talk about this. So what is he saying? We're saying here that there is a type of humility. Like what we were describing at the beginning of the Mimer when we introduced the question was this type of like sort of like lowly perspective on yourself that is like the opposite of Simcha. And now we're saying, well, actually there's another type of humility that actually is like the perfect channel for Simcha. So how do we define the difference between those two like modes of being, right?
So I would say that the anava or shiftless that we were referring to initially is one of really looking inside oneself and thinking lowly of oneself, and they're feeling they're really looking at themselves and based on what they see or based on how they their characteristics or what they have in their life, they feel lowly. And this humility that it's referring to as a way to be a keli for joy is not looking inside yourself, but really looking to where it comes from. Where are your characteristics from? Where is what you have from? It's not yours. You don't own it. It's recognize where you got this from. When you're aware of the truth and you align yourself with the truth of where what you have is from and who you are is from, it's a Yerusha, it's an inheritance that you have, then you become humble. You don't own it anymore. It's not all about you.
Mm. Right. So I feel sort of the point he's making here is like this Hakaras HaEmes, recognizing the truth. Like that becomes the key difference, right? That like, it's not that I have this like low perception of myself, right? Like I have a low self-image. It's just that what brings me a sense of humility is not a low self-image, but what brings me a sense of humility is this like awesome awareness of like Hashem, right? And who Hashem is, what the truth of reality is and how incredible that is, right? And like what a gift I've been given to be part of this, right? That's what's generating that experience. It's not coming from within, it's coming from something else beyond me, right?
Right, exactly.
Nice.
Because I know that it is an idea that people say that like when we do something wrong, we're all like, oh no, why did I do that? We blame ourselves. Mm-hmm. And when we do something right, we're like, oh, Baruch Hashem, like that's all Hashem. So I feel like, mm-hmm. like it's got to be one way or the other. Like if you mess up, like I know, yes, we take responsibility for our mess ups, but if we're like giving God credit for our good and taking all the credit for our bad, like that's inconsistent. I feel like we just have to be aligned with the truth always, know where we stand, like what we're responsible for, but it's really God through and through.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah, that is powerful. Okay, so next we're going to go to the next Isis and Mimer, which is Isis Tess, and we're actually going to see the flip side of this. We're going to say, okay, well, let's look at what it looks like. Like, let's see, like, how does the opposite of anava or bittel, what does that not bring to simcha? Okay. I actually feel like this part of the Bible is the most, like, to me, this is the most counterintuitive. I think especially in an age when we're so focused on like self-awareness and self-expression, taking care of ourselves, right? A lot of things that are like our really big focus, And I think there is a sense of like, that's going to bring me joy, right? Like this sort of this focus on being able to, you know, be aware of my needs, express those, fulfill those, right? That's what brings joy. So yeah, I think like, some of the things, ideas here, I feel like are somewhat counterintuitive, but, you know, we'll also discuss how we can sort of reconcile that with maybe some of our own experience. Okay, let's go inside.
Okay. So it says that, further deeper into this idea, hine lozo bavad danava hi keli ela simcha, ela odos danava hi goremas esa simcha. So it's not only that humility is a keli, a vessel for this joy, but also the humility actually causes the joy. V'hula hefech mamash maragashas atmo. And this is the opposite of one who is experiencing themselves. The hargashas atmo hine lo zo bilvad she'eino keli l'simcha, one who really experiences themselves. We could also translate that as like a self-obsession or even a self-consciousness. Hine lo zo bilvad she'eino keli l'simcha. Not only is that not a vessel to have joy, v'hainu demi shemargash es atmo ein simcha so shlema, and somebody who really experiences himself, the joy that he does have is not a complete joy. But this experience of self or obsession with themselves is actually a reason that a person would be depressed. So Because somebody who is really self-obsessed, he's actually mistaken about his mahus, about who he is, his identity. He's delusional about who he is. So just as he's delusional and he's mistaken about his good, he's also mistaken about his identity. So this person who's really self-conscious, self-obsessed, really into themselves, they're actually delusional about who they are, what good they have inside of them, and their true identity. They can't really see the reality of their situation or themselves, their characteristics.
Right. Yeah, no, I think also it's important to say, when we say Hargashas Atzma, like, I almost feel like it's better to I feel like a better definition is like experience of self or self-consciousness, because I feel like self-obsession sounds like a very negative connotation, like, whoa, that's like intense, that's like extreme, mm-hmm. right? But I don't know if he's necessarily talking about something so extreme. I think it's like, we all experience this in our lives, right? Where like, there are times when like, we are very aware of ourselves, right? And this might not be necessarily so conscious, but like that awareness of ourselves does bring a sense of like, like a warped sense of reality, let's say. And then what the Myra's going to say next is that what that ends up bringing you to is a sense of entitlement, right? That's what we're going to read inside next, is like that delusional sense of self brings to sense, like you start to feel like you deserve things, right? You start to feel entitled to things, right? And the step following that is, okay, entitlement then leads to depression, right? Because you're always feeling disappointed. It's never enough, right? You're never getting what you feel you're entitled to. Right.
Right.
And all this, of course, is going to be contrasted with humility and joy. Right.
So just inside over here, it says, "Mechamas ta'uzeh hu choshev shemagiyolo," which is what you just said, Hadassah, that because of this mistaken reality that he has, he thinks that everything is coming to him, that he's entitled to everything that he has or everything that he doesn't have. And then further down, it says, "Demisha margish es atmo, hinehu muteh ba'atmo l'choshe megiyolo," like we just said, that he thinks that things are coming to him. "U'meila mishum ze ein hasimcha shleima gam b'mashi yeshlo," and so what he does have in his life that he could be joyous about is not actually a complete joy. "D'simcha sa'adam hu yoser b'matana mikmo v'schar," because a person actually has more joy from receiving a gift than from somebody who is just getting payment of what they deserve. "De matana hine zehu ma shelo herviach ve'inu magialo, al kein hu sameach b'zeh," because a gift is something that a person wasn't expecting or didn't feel entitled to, and so he's really happy when he gets it. But when a person gets something according to what he's used his own strengths and put in his own effort in order to receive, that's not really something that you're so joyous about, because you feel like, just look at it as like, you're getting your paycheck. You're not overjoyed. You worked for that. Versus somebody is giving you a gift that's totally like unexpected, and you didn't necessarily feel like you deserve it. So that's really exciting and something to be happy about.
Right. And I guess the point is, a person who's living in this sort of delusional, with this delusional sense of self, which again, I think all of us have to some degree, like nothing ever feels like a gift in your life, right? You always feel like you deserve, right? Because when you're living with this sense of entitlement, like there's everything always feels like, oh, this is what I deserve, right? This is what I should get for the, you know, considering what I do and how hard I work and how much sacrifice I make, and right.
Okay, so I have a question, because I feel like really it does feel better to get something that you worked for and something that you deserve. And I think we learned about this concept in high school, that this concept of the bread of shame, that when you're receiving something that you didn't earn, then it feels bad. It feels like you shouldn't be getting this. So it seems interesting that the Friedergruber is saying that specifically a gift that you haven't earned is what brings you joy, when I would think that it doesn't feel so good to necessarily get something that is just a free gift. Whereas when you put in the work and you earn something, that feels much more satisfying and better to get a reward for that.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. It's like we have to kind of think about, like, in what situations do we appreciate gifts more, and in what situations do we not, right? Do we feel like this is not deserved? It feels uncomfortable, right? For someone just to give us something that, you know, out of nowhere. Like, we don't like getting, you know, like, we want to be able to...
Free gifts.
Yeah, like, but like on the one hand, we like getting gifts, but on the other hand, we like to feel, like, self-sufficient, right? Like, I don't want to feel like someone has to exactly. take care of me, right?
Right. Right.
So I guess, like, in what situations do we feel each of those things, right?
So I think that it could be maybe in regards to things that are necessary for us to live. We feel like we want to be able to earn that by our own sweat of our brow and be able to have what we need because we have earned it. But then maybe with things that are like gifts or like extra things that are like unexpected or I don't want to say like unnecessary, but we don't think we have to have it, then getting it is actually, I mean, when I think about that is like very exciting, very joyous. Like when
right.
your husband or your parents just give you a gift that you don't need, then it's really exciting.
Right.
But like if somebody's helping you like put food on the table, right, or pay rent, then it feels really bad.
Mm.
Yeah.
But I almost feel like with the rent or like those necessities, it's like the reason why it feels bad is because you feel like you should deserve it, right? Like you don't feel like this person's giving it to me, even though
I should have it.
Even though like I should be earning this, right? Like you feel this sense of like I should be earning this, I shouldn't be getting this from someone else. But with a gift, it's almost like, oh yeah, they're just giving it to me as a gift, right? Like it's very clear in the relationship that like they're just giving this to me, like out of the goodness of their heart, because they're just trying to express love to me, right? Right. So like I don't have to feel this sense of like of self-consciousness that I'm not like earning something that I should be deserving, right?
Right.
And I almost feel like what were you gonna say?
No, I was just gonna say almost like I could do without the gift, but if I have it, then that's great. But the other things right. that I don't really feel like I can do without, then if I'm not providing that, it feels bad that someone else is having to provide that.
Right. And I guess for like the person who's the humble person, which is what the mother is describing, it's like for them, like they're never living with this sense of like deserving that I should, like, because there's no sense because they don't have this inflated sense of self, like everything that they experience feels like a gift, right? It's like, whatever you do for me is a gift, but like that feels like something I didn't, like something that's totally unexpected, right? I have like, if you have no, like to the degree that you have a sense of entitlement, that's how much you're going to feel that this is something that's just coming to me because I deserve it, or I'm supposed to deserve it. And if I get it without having deserved it, I feel like horrible about it, right? As opposed to like, if you just don't have any of that sense of entitlement at all, then like it's just like a gift and you're just happy about it, right? You can just like feel grateful.
Totally. Yeah, that's so amazing. That's such a better place to be in because then anything we have, I mean, we're meant to have, and then anything we don't have, it's not like I should have this and why don't I? It's
right. Right. It changes your whole like perception of reality. I also think it's important to like define entitlement, that like entitlement is not the same as expectation, right? Like say that I don't have entitlement or I live with a sense of enough, it doesn't mean that like I'm expecting like my life to just be horrible, and then if it isn't, then I'm like, oh great. Like you know, I remember someone was just saying this, like you don't feel entitled for the sun to rise every morning, but you do expect it to rise every morning, right? And the same thing is true with Hashem. Like I don't, even if I don't feel entitled for Hashem to give me certain things, It doesn't mean I don't expect it, right? It doesn't mean I don't trust that he's going to do it, right? And I feel like it goes back to that, like, Makir SMS idea. That, like, the difference is that the reason why I expect Hashem to do certain things, but I don't feel entitled to it, is because I have the sense of that, not because, like, I think I deserve it. I expect it because I trust Hashem. That, like, I know how great Hashem is. I know how trustworthy he is. And that's why I have a sense of trust and expectation, but not because I feel entitled to it. And I feel like this is true about any relationship. Like, a healthy relationship is always like that, where, like, you could have a certain expectation or a certain trust that the person's going to do something because you trust them and you believe in them, even if you don't have a sense of, like, entitlement that they have to do it because I deserve it, right?
Yeah, and I think the way, maybe one way to gauge that, like, where you stand in entitlement or expectation, is what happens if you don't get it. Like, if you feel entitled to something and you don't get it, like that could totally devastate you. But if you feel like expecting something because of a relationship that you're in with God or with a person, and you don't get it, then because there's that relationship, then you know that it's for your own benefit or it's for your own good that you're not getting it because of the relationship that's there. You know that they would give it to you if it was good. So I just feel like the experience of not having something, and how you respond to that has to do with whether you feel entitled or just expecting it because you trust in them.
Right, right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so let's go on to the next ice now, where we're going to talk about the contrast to this, and what it looks like when a person does have a sense of humility, and how that brings them to a sense of joy.
Okay. So, Amnam ha'anav hu tamid b'simcha, v'lo zo bavad shehu sameach, ela shehu gam b'tuv lev. So, the humble person is always joyful, is always in a state of joy, and not only is he happy, but he's also lighthearted or good-hearted. Ha'inu da'simcha shelo hi simcha shleima. This joy that he has is actually complete joy. V'tam ha'davar hu, that v'heder hargashas atmo, she'enu mechashev es atmo leval maila, v'kol shekin she'enu mechashivas atmo. So the reason that he has this complete joy is because he's not thinking about himself too much. He's not so self-conscious, and he's not thinking so highly of himself. He's not, like, focused on all his milos. And then further down a little bit, ki makir hu es ha'emes, asher kim trichem la'asos kishe'ose ma'ashet trichem la'asos ena ma'ile klal. So what this humble person recognizes is that he does what he has to do, and that's not something to be like so praiseworthy or so think so highly of himself about, that he's just doing what he needs to do. And nothing is coming to him. He doesn't deserve anything just for doing what he's supposed to do. And with regards to everything that he does have, he's received it all by way of a gift. So therefore, he's really happy with everything that he has. He didn't deserve it. He just did what he needed to do. And everything that he has is a gift. The gamli yoso bilti mergash ve'ino muta. And because he's not so much stuck in his own experience, he's not delusional about his identity, and he's not like going beyond the right idea of his identity of who he really is. And he also feels that he has enough with what he has. And therefore, his joy is actually a real, true, complete joy. And then a little further on, it says, "Eino mitatev shaharei eino magilo klum v'lamitatev." So this person who has this real, complete joy, there's no room for depression. He doesn't think anything is coming to him. So anything that he has is a gift. And anything that he does in life, it doesn't need to be celebrated or it doesn't need to be, like, rewarded. He doesn't think he deserves anything. He's just doing what he needs to do. And that's how and that's how he is able to have this complete joy.
Right. I think it's interesting to talk, like, to, like, what does it mean practically to, like, adopt this type of humility? You know, like, the language that's used in the previous ice is hargashas atzmai, right? Like, it almost sounds like this awareness of self, right? Where you're constantly, like, thinking about yourself and who you are and, like, you know, feeling proud of your accomplishments, let's say, right? That kind of sounds what it sounds like. And, like, the more you think about yourself and how, you know, deserving you might be of good things, that ends up leading to entitlement, which then leads to depression, as opposed to this humble person that this sense of humility leads to the sense of, like, not having any sense of entitlement, you know, or expectation of people. And then that leads to this feeling of joy of, like, everything feels like a gift, right? I feel like we should just talk about this a little bit. Like, what does this mean practically in terms of, like, you know, the way we think about in the modern world? You know, again, we focus a lot on the value of self-awareness and the value of, you know, celebrating our wins and celebrating our achievements. And I guess, like, how do we sort of reconcile that with, like, what we're learning here?
So I think that, there's kind of like a neutral point that we could be interacting with the world from, which is a very healthy sense of self, where a person doesn't think negatively about themselves, and they just are kind of just aligned with the truth. And from that standpoint, a person has the opportunity to fulfill what the Friedergreb is saying, which is to focus on the MS and the truth of God, and therefore not get depressed or have the sense of entitlement. But I don't know if I am or other people are necessarily at this place of neutrality about ourselves. And I think that in today's day and age, we do have a lot of critical things to say about ourselves and a lot of negative self-talk. And sometimes it's important to go inside of ourselves and to, I wouldn't say like stay inside of ourselves and inside of our own brain, but just reflect on our lives and the positive things that we do and our wins throughout the day and just different accomplishments that we do or different positive characteristics that we have, just in order to get ourselves to this neutral place of just well-being inside of our own brain and not and I think it is important to have to go inside yourself and maybe somebody reading this might think that the Friedergreb is saying, like, don't be so into experiencing yourself, don't go inside yourself, your head too much, don't be so self-aware, but I think that certain parts of that is actually necessary in order to just, like, get ourselves to that neutral place of a healthy, positive interaction with the world, and then not stay there. Like, what is the purpose of it? Are we just going inside of our heads just to hang out there and just to ruminate about things and think about how good we are, or the opposite, think about how bad we are? That's also, like, just living inside of our heads. But if we're just using our minds to reflect on our good, that's purposeful. That gets us to a good place. And then what? And then are we staying inside of ourselves, or are we looking outwards? Are we aligning ourselves with the truth afterwards? I think to live inside your head, not to live inside your head, but to go inside your head in order to rewire your brain for more positive thinking is very important. And I don't think I don't know of another way to do that besides for actually pausing, going inside yourself and rewiring your brain.
Right, right.
Moment to moment, interaction to interaction.
Yeah, I think the key here is like when there's a purpose to it, right? Like, like, I think, you know, when we're going inside ourselves to, like, you know, celebrate our accomplishments or celebrate our wins, or like rewiring our brains to think positive thoughts, right? When, like, we're used to having habits of negative patterns of thought, then there's sort of like a purpose there, right? My purpose is to bring myself to like a healthy state of mind so that I'm able to be like open to a relationship with Hashem. And then that experience of Hashem can then bring me out of myself. But like you said, we have to first, like, we have to sort of have this focus when we're focusing on self-awareness, that this is like, there's a sort of a purpose here. There's a purpose in like sort of bringing us to like a healthy state of mind. And it almost seems like, I feel like that isn't really what the Maamar is describing here. The Maamar isn't describing a person who's doing this with intention. The Maamar is describing a person who's just falling into this hargashas atzmai, right, by default, as opposed to it being like a conscious, purposeful process.
Right. I actually just heard something really cute about that, about how long you're inside your brain. We know this idea of chametz represents like ego, and mata represents the bread of humility, right? And when does flour and water turn to chametz? After 18 minutes. So the example that this woman gave was, you could go inside your brain, you can go inside your thoughts for 18 minutes, but after 18 minutes, then it becomes chametz. So like, know that, like, then you're getting into ego. So
that's great.
So know that, like, okay, so it's okay. It's okay to go inside your head and to reflect and to put yourself in the right place, and refocus yourself inside of your thoughts. But don't stay there for more than 18 minutes, because then it just turns to chametz.
Okay, so let's skip to the end of this ice, because it gives a really beautiful analogy to this whole idea. Do you want to read it inside?
Yeah. Okay. So, the bitul hu keli l'simcha u'kmo keli kibul hu dafka k'shiyesh lo toch. K'mo chen, hine habitul yesh lo toch u'mekabal b'chi tov. De ha morgash ein lo toch. De hu male ma'atmo b'ein lo keli kibul. So, humility becomes a vessel for joy, because just like a vessel can receive something specifically when it has something to, when it has, how would you translate a toch?
I feel like a space, like a vacuum, an empty space.
An emptiness, right? An empty space, a place to actually be filled. K'mochein, hine habitol yishlo toch makabo b'chi tov. So a person who has this bitol, who has this humility, actually creates a space, the best kind of space in order to receive. De hamorgash ein lo toch. The person who is really experiencing themselves, they don't have the space in order to be filled, to whom mala ma'atmo be'in lo keli kibul, because this person who is so self-conscious, so aware of himself, is filled up with himself, and he doesn't have the space that he created in order to receive something. So there's actually a story that I'm reminded of from this analogy, that somebody once went to Rav Shlomo Chaim Kesselman. And they were complaining to him and asking him that, why am I studying so much Torah and I'm not remembering any of it? And so Shlomo Chaim said to him, I think he demonstrated. He had a cup that was filled with water, and he started pouring more water into the cup, and it just was overflowing off the sides, obviously. And he said, when you're, like, what is happening here? When the cup is already full, then whatever else you pour into it is just going to spill out the sides. So when talking to this man, I think he understood the message, was that when his brain and his thoughts were filled with other narishkeit, then there wasn't any room for the Torah that he was learning to take hold and to actually be received. There was no space for it. So I think similarly here, this humility is creating the space, is creating the void, the emptiness, in order to to allow the joy and the simcha to be there. But the person who is experiencing himself is so full. He's like filled to the top with himself, and there's no room for him to experience the joy there.
Yeah, I feel like, and I feel like we could relate to this experience so much. Like when you're like in a very self-conscious space, for whatever reason, like you're feeling self-conscious, you're feeling like judged or whatever it is. Like you don't experience things the same way. Like you could walk into a room and there could be things going on, and like everything you're going to experience is going to be filtered through your own self-consciousness. And like, what's everyone thinking of me? What's everyone saying about me? Like, what do I look like? What do I feel like? Right. And, and like when you're in a space, when you don't have that, you're not in that self-conscious space. Like you could just experience, you could be so much more open to experiences and to like actually like experiencing them for what they are and not just through this lens of like this self-delusion. Right.
My therapist gives a really good example, a really good terminology with this. She says like they haven't upgraded their operating system. So when a person is like living with all their old habits or old ideas and they're engaging in the world from that place, then yeah, there is no space, there is no opportunity for them to experience people in a better, different way. But if people have a little bit of humility, and then they're able to create the space in order to upgrade their operating system and experience people as they are now and experience situations as they are now and not live through, like you were just saying, the lens of whatever happened to them in the past, whatever their resentments are of the past. And I'm saying we so much like a buzzword today is like presentness. I feel like how can we be more present and just like not living inside your head and not like looking at the world from a very like filled with other thoughts and thoughts about ourselves or worries about ourselves. Then that's how we could be more present and engage with the world.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Okay, let's go to the end of the mimer. So the very end here is, I think, actually like one of the most like powerful points. And I think it really clarifies sort of some like misconceptions we might have about what bittul really is. And it's like a really sort of beautiful description of simcha.
The be'emes, hine shifos ha'anav, eina inyan hachna u'bittul mitad shehu shafo be'etem. So in truth, this shiflos, this lowliness of the humble person is not a nullification or a lowliness because he himself is lowly. Ha'anav yodea milas atma v'yodea de milas halalu heim chashuvim b'yoser, because this humble person actually knows what benefits he has and the good characteristics that he has and how important they are. He knows that. Aval lioso makir es ha'emes eino choshvam l'mayla umadriga shelo, but because he recognizes their truth, he doesn't think of them as something that's like greater than him. Or is that how you would translate that? Ina choshvam l'mayla umadriga shelo.
Right.
Like I feel like he's not exaggerating
right
who he is, yeah, or what his characteristics are, because he's really aligned with the truth.
Like he doesn't like attribute it to himself and his own greatness, right? Yeah.
Right. Ubiprat shabazah yis topic, and so this is enough for him. Ela adraba mevatal es atma b'chtela vola maila madrega gavoa, and he actually can nullify himself in order to come to a greater place, v'nala miza, and higher than where he's at. So, okay, I'll say it after. Aval be'etem mehuso hine anav hu takiv b'daso, and really at his root, this humble person is really very strong in his knowledge, v'chol ma shehu osa, and in everything that he does, hakohu b'das chazaka acher. Ha hechlat haba be amakas ve yishuv hadas ve kol han Hanhagosav Heimbechozek. So this humble person is acting from a place and from really great, strong self-confidence. And these are like very firm, assertive words that I feel like the Friedrich Rebbe is using, like a certain like.
Yeah, I was gonna say like, the words here are so powerful. Yeah, like Das Chazak, I think it's like strong-minded. He's like he's assertive, right? Like he has a sense of like peace and like real like confidence in his own like opinion and his own, you know, values. Like everything he does with this is a sense of like, you know, confidence and strength.
Right.
Which is like, I think like this is so like telling of like what we're, the type of humility we're describing here is not like the sense of like not, you know, low self-esteem, lack of confidence, lack of strength of character, right? It's the opposite. Like this is like the kind of person, like, again, we have to remember our description of joy. Like the primary word we used to describe joy was a sense of expansiveness, right? The ability to like I can achieve anything, right? Like that sense of like, I'm not stuck in myself. I'm not trapped. I'm like able to just be and do anything. And like, that's what our real sense of humility brings to, is like the opposite of like crushing yourself. It's the ability to like actually assert myself with a real confidence, because it's not just coming from my own, like I'm not lost in that world of self-consciousness.
Right. I think this is like an amazing description, and it like the imagery I get is like somebody with so much inner strength, like their walk is like so firm and so sure of who they are, not because of them, but because they're just aligned with the truth of where everything they have is coming from.
It's just going back to the example, so, like a relationship, like having confidence in a relationship.
That's really
like,
cool.
There's a certain confidence that, you know, being in a real, like active, alive relationship with Hashem, like really instills a confidence that's so much greater than what you can have when it's just being generated by yourself and your own accomplishments and your own qualities, you know.
Totally. I think in seminary, my principal, she reminded us that when a person just relies on themselves and their own abilities, then they have that's all they have. Like that's all they have. Anything that everyone's good at things and bad at things. So when a person is like just paying attention to themselves, then that's as far as they could go. But when a person aligns themselves with where am I getting everything I have from the Ein Sof, like from Hashem, who is Ein Sof, then their capacity, their abilities to do things is endless. It's limitless because they're aligned with God, who is endless. It's really powerful.
Right. And here we're talking, here we're talking about like just in the sense of confidence, right? Like the inner strength and confidence you can have is so much more powerful. Wow. Okay. So that's as much as we're going to explore, but obviously there's so much more here. If you really go through the Maamar in depth, which we obviously recommend you do. And again, I think this whole Hemshah here is, really a beautiful way to go into Matan Torah, right? Like we say, like, Kabbalat HaTorah b'simcha u'b'pnimius, right? That, like, we want to accept the Torah with joy. And, like, this Maamar just gives us a very practical description of what that actually looks like. Like, what does it mean? Like, what is a person who lives with that type of joy, the joy of receiving the Torah, what does that person's, like, persona actually look like?
Yes, this is some really good food for thought and some really great, very practical ideas, I feel like, that I can really see in my day-to-day life, how I interact with my entitlement or my expectations or my humility, creating space, how I interact with the world, my presentness, how much time I'm spending in my head. So these are really, it's amazing that this lofty Hasidic discourse has, we find these concepts that we're uncovering now in our own like psychological worlds.